healthcare coverage, a hot topic as Congress considers new laws. But here in central New York, experts in medical care say the system's changing whatever happens in Washington. Thanks for joining us tonight for State of Healthcare. How might things be different when you go to the doctor or hospital, when you need rehab or nursing home care? Leaders of Loretto and St. Joseph's Hospital help explain the changing face and direction of our medical care. Thank you for joining us here at WAER to talk about the state of healthcare and your institutions. Kim Townsend is with us, the president and CEO of Loretto, which provides nursing home care along with rehabilitation services and adult daycare programs. We'll talk a little bit more about the total missions and all the services of each organization in a minute. And Mark Murphy is with us, St. Joseph's Hospital Senior Vice President for System Development and Ambulatory Care. A mouthful, it's probably a job full. Acute care hospital, obviously, St. Joe's is, emergency room, surgery of various kinds, known probably for cardiac and vascular care, maybe more than other things, though I'm sure that changes all the time. I thought we'd start sort of broadly with healthcare in general, talking about the particular place each of your organizations kind of holds in the system, slightly different care purposes. We hear about policy and money issues, but we also hear about research and technology, improving care. So given the range of things that impact healthcare, many, many different things, are institutions such as yours in challenging times, or is it actually kind of exciting times because things are getting better? You know, kind of what is the state of healthcare, Kim?
Well, I would say it is very challenging, but I would say it is also very exciting. I think, you know, it's no mystery that the healthcare market is really undergoing significant changes. And so we're in the post-acute space, which is, you know, after a person leaves the hospital, but before their home. But, and I think in the past, that was a very distinctive space. But I think one of the notable changes that's occurred really since the ACA was passed was really kind of the integration and the blurring of the lines between these various pieces of the healthcare system. I think from the exciting perspective, this has been a great thing for patients, but I think from the provider perspective, you know, it's challenging to change the way you do business.
Right. And we'll get into a little more of those particulars as regards nursing home versus rehab care, the adult day programs, et cetera. Mark, I mean, a hospital, obviously, it's different realities. It's the acute care side. You know, I'm sure it's different sets of challenges. But from your state or from your point of view, what is the state? Exciting, challenging?
All of the above. Exciting and challenging, as Kim mentioned. I think that with healthcare, we're not only, I think, pivoting in terms of how we look at patients and how we look at health, but also we're beginning to pivot in terms of the overall reimbursement for healthcare. So traditionally, a hospital, I've always said, has been a rather passive provider of care. Mm-hmm. We waited for people to get sick. They came to the hospital. When they came to the hospital, we cared for them, and we discharged them, and then we waited for them again. When they needed our services, we would be there to provide the service. We are pivoting to be a more proactive provider of healthcare, and what that means is that we have to extend beyond the traditional environment in which we provided healthcare. So St. Joseph's Health is not only an acute care facility, but it is a network of services that provides the full continuum of care, but also integrates with post-acute care providers like Loretto, who has a vast array of post-acute care services as well. So the key to the future development of healthcare is that integration of services. So patients truly are never really discharged from healthcare. They might be moving from one phase of healthcare to the other, with the overall goal being to keep patients healthy, keep them functioning, keep them independent in the community, connected to their primary care providers, connected to the support systems, augmenting the support that the families provide, but looking to shift resources to that maintaining health and wellness in the community-based setting.
what does that look like? I mean, St. Joseph's, to most people, it's a hospital. Mm-hmm. They might have had surgery there. They might have visited somebody there. Mm-hmm. We know hospital stays are probably shortening. We're going to talk about that a little later. But what does that look like in terms of thinking about St. Joseph's Hospital, that it's more than just a building to go get surgery or have a baby?
Sure. I think one of the biggest components that we've moved to within the last couple of years is an integrated medical record, an integrated health record. Mm-hmm. We also have a significant number of physicians that are within our health network as well. We have a home care agency that provides services to people in the community. So even though traditionally I think the experience of people has been when they come to the hospital, they come to St. Joseph's, I think what is the, and in some ways that's the tip of the iceberg in the services that we provide, mm-hmm. with a growing component of our health system being that community-based provision of care, most directed through our extensive physician network.
Gotcha. And Kim, let's back up just a little bit and lay a little groundwork for Loretto. You know, again, Loretto to me is a place where someone might either rehab after some hospital stay or the nursing home care. I know a little bit about the daycare programs that might give some, like a family caregiver, a respite kind of thing. What are the range of services now that Loretto is providing, you know, that people either might not know about, or round that out a little for us?
So Loretto is known as being a nursing home, typically, that cares for frail elders. But in reality, it's really a large system of care, 19 different sites. And we have about 1,000 skilled nursing and short-term rehab beds. We have about 1,000 housing slots, and that's everything from independent housing to Medicaid-assisted living. And then we have about 550 people in our PACE-managed care program. So about half of the portfolio actually isn't institutionally based at all. It's housing with services. And so that's something that I think in the future, what we've seen, if you look at the people who are currently in our skilled nursing and short-term rehab, they're very, very frail. Probably people that would have been in the hospital in some cases 5 years ago, as people are being pushed down to the lowest acuity setting, mm-hmm. where they can be safely cared for. And so, therefore, the people that maybe used to be in nursing homes, which were people who just needed a little supervision, perhaps, or meals, are now out in our housing or in their own homes being maintained in our PACE program. So I think Mark is absolutely right. There has been that shift from what was really a focus on delivering high-cost care to getting people to the lowest acuity setting, which is the lowest cost setting, provided they can be cared for there safely.
Right. And it's a lot more options now, right? It's not just you're in the hospital or you're in a nursing home or you're none of the above. There's a lot more gradations of that now.
Right, and I think we're only going to see an increase in the requirement for more options, because as the baby boomers age, and I think the number of baby boomers, people over 65, is going to double, mm-hmm. by 2030, they're going to demand a lot of options. They're, mm-hmm. a different generation than the greatest generation or silent generation. They're diverse, and they're demanding, and they're intelligent and educated. And they're going to require a different type of service than, mm-hmm. what's typically been offered in the past.
Let's cover a few issues that might be called changing realities, and these are only what occurs to me, sort of. But, and you know, we can add to those as we go along. One, obviously, which you've already touched upon, is how healthcare is paid for. You know, the pay model is different, outcomes based, I've heard. You know, what does that mean? How does that affect either the patient or how the hospital has to deal with it,
Mark? Sure. So traditionally, healthcare has been reimbursed on a fee-for-service methodology, which means if you go into the hospital stay was paid for, you go to your physician visit was paid for, you use an ancillary service, the ancillary service is paid for. And there's the saying that every system produces exactly what the system was designed to produce. Uh-huh. So it's not, I think, inconceivable where you can see that the healthcare system became adept at episodic care. So every time somebody went to the hospitalization was paid for. So there was no systematic movement towards managing patients aggressively. It was basically reimbursement for those lapses in health where there was a fee-for-service methodology. The pivot is where healthcare providers are being engaged in reimbursement where there is actually a financial incentive for high quality, cost-effective care. So the more that we, a health system under what they're calling a value-based reimbursement methodology, can manage patients towards the lower cost provision of care, so maybe seeing your physician proactively if you have a chronic condition, who is able to adjust your medication, who's able to manage your diet selection so it prevents an exacerbation of your chronic condition. There's a financial incentive for that activity as opposed to the multiple admissions to the hospital, which actually, under a value-based reimbursement system, actually health systems are penalized for that. So it's good for the patient because it drives providers towards providing community-based care, and it also drives providers to pay attention to quality and quality metrics. So that's really the pivot that the reimbursement system is helping healthcare move towards and ultimately will help patients and their families.
Is there some culture change that's being difficult inside of a hospital where people were kind of used to doing, somebody comes in, you order whatever tests, they have to have this or that done? Maybe you don't think about it before and after that situation.
Sure. Yeah, and that's really the re-engineering of healthcare. I'll give you a tangible example of that. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of coming to an emergency rooms traditionally are geared towards processing patients through the emergency room as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And so the facilitation is towards a determination of whether the patient requires an inpatient admission or not as quickly as possible. So the tendency is for patients with chronic conditions, and within St. Joseph's Hospital, we did a study, patients who came to the emergency room with congestive heart failure. If they came to the emergency room with a congestive heart failure exacerbation, 60% of the time they're admitted as an inpatient. Mm-hmm. We have begun to pivot our system to maybe take a little bit more time with the patient in the emergency room and ask at that critical decision point, can they be sent home with augmented home care services in order to avert that inpatient stay. And what we found is that we can, with effective medication management, with placing some patient on an observation status, which means we watch them for 24 hours, we begin their medication regime. When we see that they're improving, transitioning that person back to the home with home care services and in a connection with their primary care physician, rather than that 5 to 6 day inpatient stay. So that's an example of how we need to re-engineer the health system and how we've provided health differently in the future as opposed to how we've done it in the past.
Now, has that impacted the long-term care situation as well, like how you get reimbursed? My guess is somebody in a nursing home for a long period of time, it's maybe not so different. But as we described, there's a lot of different variations of what that means.
Well, I think we've experienced on the long-term care side, we've experienced the same phenomenon, which is a move from really volume, delivering services, getting paid for services, to a value-based payment methodology. And so for us right now, that looks like withholds on our reimbursement towards quality measures and taking on risk, right? I think all of the providers within the healthcare system, long-term care, post-acute care included, are encouraged to take on risk. Now, you could do it at various levels.
What do you mean when you say take on risk?
So in our PACE program manages people who would ordinarily be eligible to be in a skilled nursing, highest level of care, but because of a team-based approach of management, they're able to be managed in their home. So that's really a managed care product. Mm-hmm. And in that product, we receive a capitated payment. So every month we receive a certain fixed amount of dollars from which to pay for all of their costs, whether it's hospitalizations, visiting their specialists, their drugs, Their primary care is delivered in the PACE center. So that's an example of how, as a system, we're taking on risk, because if we don't keep those people healthy and in their homes, then we will directly be at risk for that. I think
for having to pay out for more services, even though you're getting the same per patient reimbursement.
Correct. For the downside risk that the care that they will receive in that given month will exceed the payment we've received for that care. So I think that in another way that kind of has impacted both of our systems, and I think in a fairly positive way, is how closely St. Joseph's Health and Loretto work together to reduce length of stay. Mm-hmm. So when we see in those cases individuals admission can't be avoided and they have to be admitted into the hospital, our teams work very closely from the onset to ensure that we have a seamless path to transition them to our system rather than home if that's what they need. Perhaps they need an additional period of time where they're tuned up. And in that way, it reduces the length of stay on the hospital side, and then we actively work to reduce the length of stay, even in our rehabilitation, to get them home as quickly as possible. And that's kind of that integration across the continuum of care.
And that's being encouraged by the financial model?
Correct.
Is part of that, and not to sound overly cynical, but that it gets away from, or it almost de-incentivizes staying in the hospital another couple of days at several thousand a day, or ordering more tests. You know, there's those kind of stereotypes of kind of charging up the bill. You know, there's these nightmares of somebody goes in with an itch on their back and, you know, $18,000 of tests later.
Exactly, right.
Is this, I mean, not to attack that necessarily, but does this kind of almost make that not even workable?
It definitely de-incentivizes the utilization of testing that isn't indicated for the patient's condition. Mm-hmm. Really, what you're looking at is providing patients the care that they need at the time that they need it, but shifting towards a proactive provision of care as well. So, you know, whatever the testing that we would be doing in the hospital, the question is, if it was really important testing, we really shouldn't be waiting until they come into the hospital. Your primary care provider should be proactively saying, if there is an issue, let's do it on an outpatient basis. Let's evaluate your condition. Let's prevent an exacerbation. If there is a recurrence of your symptoms and you come into the hospital, the incentive to manage the patient appropriately, because I do hear what you're saying, where people might say, well, I might be not receiving the inpatient care that I need. You have to remember that the readmission of that patient is a financial cost as well.
Sure.
So the hospital,
big one.
Very big, right. Very big. So, and as Kim referenced, that integration between the acute care provider and the post-acute care provider under these value-based purchasing arrangements, we're both incentivized to make sure they stay in the hospital for the right amount of time, but we also transition them appropriately and in a coordinated fashion so there isn't a readmission or a re-exacerbation of the patient's condition, and we jointly take responsibility for that. And that's where the integration between inpatient and post-acute care really, I think that soft handoff that we call it is so important. And we found that that's a lot of opportunity in terms of healthcare. It used to be when the hospital discharged a patient, we were done. It's somebody else's problem.
Right.
The post-acute care provider would say, well, if they got sick and they needed something else, that's not my problem. They're going back to the hospital. Now we're sitting down at the table saying, let's work together in the best interest of the patient. Because from the patient's perspective, one of the most difficult positions to be in is in a situation where they're discharged in the community, readmitted, discharged again. It's a lot of time, energy, stress on families and patients. And these changes in the health system kind of help us work together for that common goal.
Coming up, obesity, diabetes, and other chronic conditions impact healthcare. And what will baby boomers demand of the system? Our experts weigh in on aging and lifestyle impacts. You're listening to State of Healthcare on WAER 88.3 FM.